Well, hello everyone. Welcome back to another session of Microsoft Learn Live. Microsoft Learn Live is a series of guided courses designed to help you increase your knowledge of Azure. And hopefully you can do it in a way where you can apply all the lessons you learn to your own projects as well. My name's Kim Philpotts. Over here, I think, is my good friend Glenn Stevens. Glenn, how are you doing?
Hey Kim, I'm well. I hope you're well too.
I am. I'm very well. Thank you. Awesome. So, hey, Glenn, look, why don't you go and introduce yourself to the people? I'm just going to bring up some contact details for you.
Cool. So my name is Glenn Stevens. I'm a senior content developer here at Microsoft as part of the Learn Live team. You can find me on Twitter at Glenn T. Stevens and at GitHub at Glenn Stevens, where I push the messages and things out. Mostly on my Twitter feed, it's mostly around my tech work. So you'll find things about what I'm building or just thoughts and interests. It's a bit of fun. I've been around for a while. I like to make things and build apps as you do, Kim, as well. In fact, today's session, Kim, is all going to be about deploying your applications out to Azure automatically when your app changes. But before we get into that, it's probably a good idea for you to introduce yourself as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So, hi everyone. My name is Kim Philpotts. I'm also a senior content developer at Microsoft. Work on the Learn Live team. Like Glenn said, I like to build things. I come from a development background. For those of you who haven't joined us before, you might be aware that our accents are Australian. So we're in Australia. I'm in Melbourne. Glenn, you're in Brisbane.
Yeah, that's right.
So fantastic. And I should also introduce to you our moderators as well. So we've got a couple of moderators on the line. So feel free to say hello, Rob Gibbons and Matt Calder. So they're going to be answering your questions as well as us as we go through the session today. So please say hi. And of course, welcome to everyone who's joining us as well. So, you know, feel free to make yourself known, say hello in the chat window and we'll see. All right, yeah, we're in the chat window. Little bit of a hire from Matt Calder.
Cool.
Fantastic. Beautiful. All right. So shall we get started, Glenn? What do you think?
That's a good idea. Let's do it.
Yeah, fantastic. All righty. So Glenn, you already mentioned that today's session is all about managing the deployment of our application, which of course is something very deep to our hearts, being both developers as well. Before we jump into that, though, I want to just go back to our scenario that we're building in this series of courses, just to see how deployment fits into the overall picture. So what we have in our scenario is we're working for a company, a fictitious company called... We're working for a company called Van Arsdell. It's in the real estate business. It's running a lovely website where they're selling real estate properties, as you do when you're in real estate. The project itself is built in .NET Core. It's using SQL Server, which is a very common combination. So this was the sort of the starting point where we had an on-premises solution. So we actually, in our third session at the moment, in the first part, what we went and did is we moved the web application into an app service in the cloud. So we managed to do that. We did it with no changes at all, which was pretty amazing. What did we do in session two, Glenn?
Oh, there we actually integrated the next part. We actually migrated the database from an on-premises SQL Server installation into a cloud-based Azure SQL Server installation. We also not only moved the database, but we also moved the data from that into the cloud using the data migration assistant. And that was really nice because everything was in the cloud at that point. And we had, how many code changes did we make, Kim?
Zero.
Zero, exactly. So for today's session, we're going to be looking at automatic deployments. And our aim is really to have a process to automatically download, build, and deploy an updated version of the Van Arsdell website as soon as someone commits to GitHub. So there's a few things we're going to go through, Kim. Now, Kim, I consider you the better of us when it comes to DevOps. Why don't you take the group through the points?
That's a very bold statement, Glenn. But look, we've kind of got two objectives that we're going to go through. So first of all, we're going to talk about the benefits of automated deployment versus like a manual deployment process. And for people who come from a development background, it probably makes a lot of sense, but we'll cover that off. And then we're going to use something called the Azure App Service Deployment Center, which is a bit of an awkward name, but we're going to use that to automate our build and deployment process. Now we've got a few people who've said hi in the chat window as well. So let's just say hi to Sudeep. How are you doing? Welcome back. Susanta, my apologies if I'm mispronouncing names. Akila.
Cool. Hi, Akila.
And Ken. Welcome back, Ken. Nice. Beautiful. So welcome, everyone. And, you know, just a reminder, this is a live session, so feel free to ask questions as you go through. You know, if you have any questions, pop them in the chat window. We'll get around to answering them. Or, you know, our good moderators, Rob and Matt, will also be able to answer questions as well. Okay, now, if you think back to our previous sessions, right, what we did is we used right-click deploy from Visual Studio to publish our web application into an Azure app service. So, Glenn, I don't know how I feel about this. There's a lot of different opinions out there in regards to right-click publishing, right? So what do you feel about right-click publishing?
Well, it's convenient, but problematic. But I think it's probably a good idea to just ask everyone who's on the line if they're doing it and how does it make them feel if they're using it already?
And do people use it? Or do they use some kind of continuous deployment pipeline? So let us know in the chat window. But look, you know, right-click publish is actually something that's, you know, it's really convenient. It's really easy, and, you know, it works, right? But it, as you mentioned, Glenn, it can be problematic. In fact, one of our good DevOps cloud advocate friends, Damian Brady, has a catchy little phrase, which is friends don't let friends right-click publish, which is a pretty funny sort of a statement. And there's actually a decent article that he wrote, and I'm going to post this into the chat window so people can have a look at it a little bit later on. But in that article, he makes a few key points about right-click publish, and that is, and he's a bit of a joker, so he says, you know, a fantastic way to accidentally break your production builds, you know, so you don't want to do that, obviously. But as I also mentioned, right-click publish is very, very common and works for a lot of developers around the globe. It's, you know, it's used all over the place. But the problem, I suppose, is that there's so much dependent on just, you know, one person, one machine in the whole right-click publish type of scenario. And look, there's some other issues as well that people might face. Glenn, what are some issues that you've seen in the past?
Oh, well, there's plenty, really. Maybe you've got some libraries on your machine that are just not on the build machine. Maybe you didn't merge all the changes in that you had to. So you right-click publish, but you're right-clicking your version of the code, not the one in the version control repository. Maybe there's unit tests that you didn't run that you need to make sure run and work effectively before the application is deployed. Maybe there's operating system upgrades and there's the code no longer compiles or runs effectively. There's countless issues that can happen during that process. So that's kind of a few things. Are there more from your side, Kim?
Yeah, I can tell you a real world story from my past, which is where I was working at a company that didn't have a continuous deployment strategy. And it was actually working on mobile applications. And one of the problems is that in a mobile world, you have a whole bunch of things to do with certificates and complexities around publishing. And it was all done from one person's machine. And when that person left, all of a sudden, the company couldn't deploy anymore. They didn't have the right configuration. So that's a real issue. And I probably shouldn't say that person was me, but it may have been. All right. So I've just got a question up here on the screen. You know, what are the issues you've had when, you know, deploying your applications to the web? So feel free to share in the chat window as well, if you want to do that.
Yeah. Well, so Santa's said they've used Jenkins, Code Cloud, and Gradle for DevOps. That's really good.
Yeah, and Ken as well says he uses FTP or ZIP, you know, which again is a completely valid approach as well.
Yeah.
In fact, there's so many ways we can deploy out to the web, you know. So,
interestingly, Kim, I think there's, like, you and I both have worked in health and like e-health, and I know some of the e-health systems that I've worked with, they've got systems that are over 30, 40 years old that they just can't upgrade. So some of those older techniques are actually still part of the process for a lot of organizations. Ideally, we want to move to more modern and civilized formats, but yeah, they still exist.
Absolutely, they still exist, you know. And so, you know, I think what really matters is you have a process, right? Yeah. But, you know, adding in things like continuous deployment is something that is definitely a good thing to do. Sure. And I think it's, as well, Glenn, it's one of those things that is often a little bit scary for developers. Because in the past, you know, Susanta mentioned using Jenkins and CoCloud, Gradle, often there's these very complex pipelines that people have had to set up, and it just seems a little bit too hard sometimes. And so people will normally do it at the end of their project, if at all. But the reality is that DevOps is just getting easier and easier. And so I think for most people and most organizations, it's probably a pretty good time to set this up if you don't already, because it can be quite easy to set up, or at least a minimal pipeline. And you know, that's what we're going to cover in today's session. So I guess what we really want here, Glenn, is we want sort of a minimal process, at least, where when a developer goes, commits a change, you know, perhaps to say GitHub, for example, we're going to take that code and we're going to deploy it out into our app service in Azure.
Cool. Yeah. And remember that with GitHub, there's also various quality gates that it has, like managing pull requests, that can prevent any stinky or junky code just getting committed to your master branch. So if you need a pull request to be approved, well, that can be a little bit of a gate as well to manage it. And in fact, there's a range of tools that you'll often find work together.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Glenn, it's probably going to be a pretty quick session today, but what I want to do is sort of just jump straight in and, you know, set up an automatic deployment for the Van Arsdell solution. What do you think?
I think that's ideal. Let's do it.
All righty. Well, first of all, let's just quickly come over here, and I might just make this a little bit full screen so you can all see it. Okay, so what I have here is I've got a solution. It's sort of already, I've already got this deployed here. Here's our application that we have. Beautiful, nice, some lovely real estate properties. Now, for those of you who want to try this out yourself, a pretty good option, or if you want to follow along, basically, if we come down and have a look, I'll put a link down below here. Actually, it's over your face, Glenn, my apologies. Van Arsdell repo. Okay, so what the Van Arsdell repo is, aka.ms Van Arsdell repo. If we go along to that, and I'll just go to that, Van Arsdell repo. Okay, in the Van Arsdell repo, if you want to set up your solution for today, and you haven't been at the previous sessions, or if you've been doing it in the sandbox as well, come down to the series overview and we look into here. If we go down to session 3, which is where we are, okay, we can automate our build and deployment process. And what this is going to do is you can activate the sandbox in here. And as well as that, it's got some instructions here for setting this up. So all I really have at the moment is I've got the application or the GitHub repo forked to my local environment, okay? And basically have everything set up as we had from the previous session. So if we have a look, it's actually up in the web or up in the on the internet here with a real URL. And we've deployed that code in there, and also the database changes has been made as well. So we've got some database or some images here that are being served out from the website. Okay, so that's sort of where we're at the moment. Now, what we want to do is we want to go and set up that deployment. Now, if we come over to Azure and we go and have a look at our app service inside of here. Okay, and remember the app service is essentially what is serving out our web pages. Okay, so what we want to do is we want to go and have a look at a section inside of here. So I'm navigated to the app service, and there's something down here called the deployment center, and we can access that from the left menu here. Okay, if I click on that, it's going to show us some options here for deployment. So Glenn, why don't you just sort of walk me through some of these deployment options that we have here?
Yeah, sure. Well, Kim, the deployment center is really part of Azure. We choose the location of your code, as well as how you build your app and how you deploy it to the cloud. And you can see though that blue dot in the middle next to two other gray dots. It's actually talking about a three-step process. So step one is the location. And although our real estate app's code's hosted on GitHub, there's also other alternatives as well. You might be using Bitbucket, Azure repos, a OneDrive folder or Dropbox or even somewhere else really. But Deployment Center has a number of options. So the decision isn't really about what's the best option. Rather, it's more about where's my source code located. That's what we're really asking. And you can see there's a few options. There's file repositories, like OneDrive or Dropbox, as I mentioned, or you can use a more civilized approach and use a version control system like GitHub. So in our case, we're going to be using GitHub. And
yeah.
But regardless of the one you use, you'll just need to provide the appropriate user credentials for it. So if you access things like OneDrive or Dropbox, you'll need to provide a username and password, or maybe even use two-factor authentication if that's configured for your system as well that you're connecting to. And the same is true if you're using GitHub or Bitbucket or any other source code provider. If we want Azure to build our source code, it just needs permission to get access to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Sorry, Kim.
No, that's all right. Keep going.
Okay, so the authorization process, it's just provider specific. And it's typically an OAuth2 based system where it'll prop up a web page from that host system that you're connecting to, provide the details, give permission, and then Azure can then use those credentials that you've provided. And it'll give Azure the required access permissions to access your code fundamentally. So Kim, what we're going to do today is we're going to select GitHub as our option because that's where we've got our source code located.
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got it in GitHub, right?
We are. That's right. And we'll need to authenticate. I'm just going to take a look at your screen here, Kim.
Yeah. So actually, at the moment, I've already authenticated into GitHub. But look, if you hadn't, what you'd see here, because you can see in the screen here, maybe I should zoom this in, but you can see that I'm already authenticated here. Okay, but when you click on this, instead of saying change account or say authenticate, it'll pop up a dialog, enter in your credentials, and you're good to go. Then you're basically hooked up to your GitHub inside of there. All right, so we've selected GitHub because that's what we're going to go with. Should I hit continue?
Should we walk this through? You should, yeah. And then we're on to the next step, which is looking at the build options. You want to take us through that, Kim?
Yeah, okay, so there's actually a few different build providers that we have, and let's just take a moment and talk about what we have here. So the first option that we have here is something called the App Service Build Service, right, which is kind of a kooky name, but it uses a technology called Kudu, and you know that's normally how people refer to it as Kudu. And what this is kind of like a really simple system that deploys your code from a predefined code branch. And the great thing about this is there's basically very, very little setup that we have in there. Now, we've also got some others. You can see here I have GitHub Actions in preview. So this would be a good option. Typically, this is set up using YAML. Glenn, I know you love YAML. So this is a way that you can set up a workflow straight from GitHub. So from GitHub to your app service. Now, of course, you know that's tied to GitHub. So if you're using GitHub, and then what we have as well is we've got Azure Pipelines, and so this is probably the most powerful of all of these. It's part of the Azure DevOps services. It supports a really wide range of features. So it includes, you know, things like you can set up all your automated testing for, you know, and things for complex scenarios, release pipelines, all sorts of great stuff in there. Look, that's a really, really good option, I think. If you are perhaps tracking work items within Azure Pipelines, if you've got a Git repo that's in Azure DevOps, or anything else. So basically, I think you know a lot of people will probably mature through to Azure Pipelines. It's probably the most mature of all of those. But you know, we've got to kind of choose between these various options, Glenn. What do we think is a good option for what we have?
Like when we look at it. I mean, Kudu is a really good starting point. It's certainly good enough for a lot of projects. And I think when we look at the Van Arsdale solution, it's actually really quite simple, Kim. There's not a huge rate of projects or solutions that need configuring and putting things in huge amounts of places. And if it was a large complex project, Azure Pipelines would be a good fit for that, I think. Particularly if you're working with large teams or you've got a continuous integration and testing environment, or even just a more complex deployment. And if we look at the GitHub Actions, it's in preview, so it's probably not the most ideal one to use just yet. So there's probably more configuration and you'd probably want to get used to GitHub Actions. But if you're already familiar with GitHub Actions, that might be an appropriate choice for you as well. But even if you use the GitHub Actions with ours, because we have multiple solutions in our product, there's more configuration that would be needed. And while we can choose which one to use, our real estate solution only has one project. So our needs are really simple. So I'd probably go with Kudu as the right option here, Kim.
Yeah, so I think that's a pretty good place to go, right? Because we want to set this up nice and simply. We're not building our entire DevOps pipeline or continuous integration pipeline. Kudu is a really nice, really simple system that can get your deployments happening straight away. Absolutely.
Cool. So let's head back to our solution then. So we've decided on Kudu. So let's select that one and click continue.
Absolutely. First of all, Glenn, actually, if you don't mind, before we jump into that, because some people will be looking at Azure DevOps, right, and want to get started with Azure DevOps. So there's actually some really good information over at Channel 9, which I'll just quickly share with people if you want to delve into that, because it's when you talk about the whole sort of DevOps pipeline, it's more than just sort of setting up a deployment pipeline. But let me just bring up this Channel 9 link. So there's a great series of videos available, which walk you through everything from what is DevOps to source control, work item tracking, unit testing, release pipelines, et cetera, et cetera. So all of the good stuff in there. And another really good option as well, which I'll just post into the chat window, if you want to delve into Azure DevOps, is actually this learn path as well. So I posted that out into the chat window as well. This is a learning path of deploying applications with Azure DevOps. So I can highly recommend that one. Anyway, sorry, Glenn, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
So no, they're all good resources. And I've gone through both of them. I really quite like them, actually. And there's even some more stuff over on Microsoft Learn when it comes to deployment as well. I think we'll share some of those links towards the end of the session.
Absolutely.
All right.
Okay, so back here, right? We selected our build provider of Kudu.
Cool. So Susanta had a question in the chat window as well. One more point, Kim, Glenn, moderator. I've faced with GitHub is that most of the open source GitHub has good clean code of Linux, iOS, R, but not for Windows, OS. Yeah, that's I'm not sure what I can comment on that. But we might have to take that as a statement. But thanks. All right, so we're going to use Kudu. We're going to continue over those lines. And we need to select the GitHub organization repository and branch at this point, Kim. So with the Kudu service, we can deploy our selected branch into production. And because we're going to select the master branch, most likely, because that's the one that's actively used, that's the one that's going to be built as part of this process.
Absolutely. So let me select my organization. So I fork my repo into my GitHub. Okay. So I'm going to select KFuelPods here. That's my GitHub repo.
Yeah. And I know you've got a huge amount of repositories, Kim.
Yeah. Look, I've got an embarrassingly large number of repositories over at my GitHub. Most of them are dead. But this one here, let me have a look. This is the one that I forked. MS Learn Live migrating to the cloud. Beautiful. Okay, so as you said, Glenn, what we're going to do is we're going to pick a particular branch that we're going to deploy from, right? So I can come down here and add branch. Now, we don't have, at the moment, lots of branches set up. Of course, in a real environment, you might have a dev and a test and a master branch or release branch, depending on how you set up your source control. We're just going to select master, right? Because we're a little bit cheeky. We're going to commit into master and we want it to build that. All right,
cool.
Beautiful. Okie dokie. So where to now? Should we continue on?
We should. I think we've made the appropriate selections there.
Beautiful. All right. Well, let's continue.
Cool. And then we've got the summary details.
Okay. And so we can see it's coming from that repo, from the master branch, and the build provider is the app service build service.
Cool. So if we click on finish, that will actually set up. Or it'll start the process of essentially downloading the source code from GitHub, building it locally, and then deploying it to our app service.
All right. Well, let me click that button there, Glenn.
Cool. Cool.
All right, this seems all a little bit too simple. Let's have a look at what's going to happen here.
Well, that's the beauty of it, Kim. It does feel a bit simple.
It's because DevOps shouldn't be hard, right? And I actually saw a comment from Susanta earlier on, challenges with Jenkins DevOps and also Git and all of that. So these days it's a lot easier. All right, so we click the finish button, right? And what we're having a look at, it's probably gonna take a minute or two, but you can see that it's actually starting this build processing. So it's fetching my code, right? It's running a deployment here. And in a moment, it'll probably be deployed. But look, Glenn, how's this kind of working, you know, behind the scenes? When I commit code to my GitHub, is Azure just polling my GitHub repo for changes?
No, there's a fantastic automagical way of making that happen. I like that word. I'm not sure if it's a real word, but it feels like it describes it perfectly. Once it sets up that mechanism, there's actually something in the GitHub repository that's set up called a webhook. And that webhook, if you go to the GitHub repository, we'll be able to see that. So let's go there now for a second.
Yeah, okay. Let me go ahead and open this. This is my GitHub repo.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And if you go into settings.
You zoom in here a bit. So go into settings.
Yeah, and over on the left, you should see the webhooks.
Okay, and under webhooks.
Yeah, then essentially what you'll see is a link back to the Azure portal. It's not actually quite our URL of our website. In fact, you can see an SCM as a prefix before the Azure websites. So it's going to another website that's hosted on Azure that receives the notification from GitHub that does the build and deployment process to our app service. So anytime we commit a change to GitHub and that commit is accepted, it will send a notification off to that URL to let it know that it needs to essentially do some work. In our case, update the local copy of the code, rebuild, and then redeploy.
That's pretty cool. So it's not just polling, it actually sees the changes from GitHub and
hooks into that. As they're done.
All right, so back over here, let's have a look back at our app service. Our deployment's finished, right?
Cool.
Success. We can see that we have success there. It's actually gone and deployed that code that we have there. In fact, let me just refresh this. Okay, it can take a moment because it's actually like, you know, we've actually just sort of changed all the code behind the scenes. So it's doing its initial spin up, I suppose. But we can see, beautiful, we have that information. So that is what was deployed from the Kudu service. In fact, back here, we can see there's some logs next to here, right? And that logs, when we have a look at that, we can see all of the steps that it went through in order to do the deployment there. Beautiful.
Cool. So Kim, you're telling me that anytime we make a change now to our GitHub repository, we're gonna see the app redeployed? Is that what's gonna happen?
That's the plan.
Cool. So can we make a change to the GitHub repository now, just something simple, and then see that happen?
Yeah, okay, cool. So there's a lot of different ways I could do that, right? I could go into Visual Studio, which is how most people would do it, and make a code change. But look, just to show you that it's not, you know, being driven from Visual Studio or, you know, any sort of client tool we have, let's just make the change directly in GitHub, right? By the way, this is not recommended for all developers, but... but certainly something we can do. Okay, so here we've got our source, right? And this is deploying from our starter solution. So what should we change, Glenn? Should we, let's just update the title up here. Okay.
Yeah, that's probably simple enough.
Yeah, so that's probably what, gonna be under our views.
Yeah, and probably the shared is a good option.
And then like our layout CSHTML probably?
Yeah.
Beautiful. All right, so what I could do is I could come into here and I could make a change to this code directly. Right? I can sort of come in here, hit the edit button. Like I said, not always the totally recommended approach, but let's just do this. Let's just put in putting testing deployment. All right, so I'll make a change. Cool. Is that going to work for me?
It should be okay.
Should be okay. All right, let's commit that change with an appropriate commit message and commit those changes. All right, so we've made a commit now to our code. So what we should see, if we come back to the portal, is that already it's actually gone and seen out that we've made a change and it's running the deployment. Super simple.
Cool. Can we look at things like the logs of those changes, or we'll wait for it to build it? In fact, it looks like it has built already.
It's done, Glenn. It's built. Cool. It's ready. So yeah, but totally. We can always come over here. We can have a look at the logs and we can see what's happening. You can actually come in and, you know, further have a look at other logs as well that actually went through as the Kudu system built it. But look, if I come over here and I refresh this, what we should see is an updated title, because that's what we went and changed. So let's see if that is the case. Home page. That doesn't look right, does it? Did I commit that change?
I thought you did.
Let's come back over here.
That page might be using a different layout. Just go to the home page, Kim.
To the home page?
That is the home page, yeah.
That is the home page. All right, let's have a look. This is the joys of doing things live, right? Let's have a look. So we've got testing deployment here. Our starter solution. Let me go and have a look and see if this is the right page, Glenn. We might not have the right page here. I don't think it's going to be the completed one. Go to our home page. Let's just go straight to our home page here.
Yeah.
Let's do that. All right. And so finally I knew the code. All right, let's make that deployment page. Could be that it's not using that. Let's have a look. Let's go and commit that change. Again, we come back over here. Cool thing is it's already building that for us.
Running the deployment as well. Yeah, there's not many changes to it as well, so. Hopefully we see that very soon on the server. You may have accidentally edited the wrong file there, Kim. It could have been one of those simple changes, you know, the ones that just get you.
Yeah, and so there's a question there from Akila. So whenever we make a change in GitHub, the webhook sends the request and updates it. That's absolutely right. Mm. Yeah.
It looks like Rob's responding to the answer as well, or to the question as well.
Fantastic. Interesting, Glenn. We've still got our homepage here.
Have we got the right app service? I feel like asking that question, Kim.
That's a good question, Glenn. Let's have a look.
Is the pre-baked?
I think it is the right one.
What browser are you running there, Kim?
I'm running not Chrome, I'm running Edge here.
Okay.
All right, let's have a look at our deployment center here.
This is just further reinforcing the fact that we are very live.
Very, very live. Let's have a look at what it says. Green recycle, let's have a look. Let's see if we've got anything in our logs.
Mm.
You know what the problem here is, Glenn.
What is it? We're using the completed where we've been updating the
Yeah, so this is why you want to have a look at the logs, right? So it seems to me here, looking at these logs here, what it's actually doing is it's going and getting 2-completed, right? So it's actually going into the completed version of it. So I think I have been changing the wrong file, Glenn, because it's actually set up under the completed. So let me come back here. Let's see if we can do this again. Let's go into our completed solution. Let's go into our views. Let's just go straight for our homepage here.
This should be quicker now.
So it's a little bit of an unusual setup that we have in this GitHub repo because we've got actually the same solution in multiple stages. And so it looks like I've just picked the wrong stage. So let's make this deployment page. All right. And we'll make this even more changes. And we can see it's running the deployment again. Oops. So the cool thing is, even if you with continuous deployment, if you break it, you can fix it and you can deploy it fast.
Oh, Rob's comment, a cookie for whoever figures out the answer before our fearless trainers do. Oh, goodness.
So Ken says, awesome and scary as well. Yeah, there's nothing more terrifying than coding life. Absolutely. And I'm only changing one line of code.
Yeah.
Let's have a look at
nothing
that.
Nothing worse than realizing
look at that, Glenn. Changing
the code. It's up there. Oh, nice. Ooh, confetti time.
Confetti time. All right, beautiful. So we can see up the top here, it has actually taken our change. So we were changing in the wrong branch, right? But again, that's the power of having a look at these logs that we have in there. Okay, cool.
So Kim, can I ask a few questions about this process as well?
Yeah, sure.
What if the change I made wasn't something that essentially broke the build? What would happen if I checked in a change and then everything failed? Would it still deploy that change?
Let's just do it, hey? Let's break the build. It's probably what I'm best at, Glenn, when it comes to that. So I've been known as the build breaker. So if I come in here and let's edit this page again, right? And so for those of you, having a look at this, what this is actually a little bit of code in here, right? That's what that little ampersand at sign does, right? So if I was to just put some stuff in here, right, it's going to try and interpret that as code and it's going to break, right? That's my understanding.
Yes. Yeah.
And we'll commit this. Oops, I did it again, right? As in breaking the build. We'll commit this change. And we can see it's going to run the deployment. Okay, so effectively what we're expecting here is we're expecting the build to fail because I've committed some bad code, which hopefully you'll never do, right? But let's see what it actually does. Okay, so it's finished, right? And what it's done is it said it failed. And what's cool about this is even though it's failed, it's detected the fact that it's failed the build. And it hasn't made that active. So it didn't break the production site. In fact, what it did is it just left the previous one as active, right? So if I, come back here, this is still going to work just fine, right? It's going to still be on this one here. And, again, you can come and have a look at the logs. And in those logs, we should probably be able to see some information about it breaking, right? And in fact, here we can see it down here. It's saying, hey, you got an error in our home repository. It's basically, if I copy that or look at that enough, it's sort of saying, hey, you've got an error there. Okay, so what do we do, Glenn? We got an error?
Well, we'd normally want to correct it. It's kind of an interesting process. Like we might be trying to apply a fix to GitHub, essentially because we've got something broken in production. Like if that failed, maybe we want to revert back to an earlier build. What can we do there, Kim?
Yeah, so what we could do, right, is maybe we say, somebody did commit a change. It was valid. It passed. Everything was good. But you decided to roll it back. One of the nice things about Kudu and this process is, let's say I wanted to roll back to right where I was at the beginning, right? So at the moment, we're saying deployment page up here. I could actually come down to this bottom one here. And when I click on the logs, you might have noticed a button earlier on, which says redeploy, right? So you can prick any of your previous builds and you can say, you know what, switch back to that one. And so I hit the redeploy button, okay? And in a moment, what you'll see is it should, and we can see it right now, it's running that deployment and it should move this active back down to here.
Cool.
Give that a second.
Oh, we check that on the website and then we're good to go, I imagine.
Absolutely. Okay, and so we can see it's successful. And this is now the active. Okay, so it's basically there. So which means if I refresh this, we'll get rid of this deploy page message and we should go back to our home message that we started off at.
Cool. Hey, look, that's really awesome, Kim. So we're using Kudu here, which is open source. So, Susanta said a bit earlier, obviously like open source, but you can check out the Kudu project itself, right?
The Kudu project that sits behind this?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So yeah, that's just to finish that off. Yes, this says homepage. So we've gone back to our homepage. Okay. All right. So remember when we had a look at GitHub and we set up that hook, or Azure DevOps, or no, sorry, not Azure DevOps, Kudu set up this hook here. It actually had this site, which was not quite our app service. It has this .scm, right? So if I actually go and open that in a new tab, it's going to, hold on a second, let's have a look at it. Probably don't want that whole link. What I really want is just up to, yeah. All right. And what this is taking us to is the SCM, right? The source control page behind this. So this is actually kind of like a hidden page that it creates. And it's going to tell you all the information about your Kudu environment. So your app setting, deployments, what files, so you can have a look at logs inside of here, what runtime inversions, all sorts of great things. So you can click through some of these. It's also got some things like debug consoles, so you can actually go and run a command inside of there. Process Explorer, so you can see what processes are running in your app service, which I would have thought would show me the, just refresh that. Yeah, it's showing me that, you know, we've basically got the web server running, .NET's running. It's got some tools as well, some diagnostics. You can, you know, zip deploy. There's lots of really, really good stuff in here. So this is kind of like the admin console for the Kudu environment. All right, so that's a good thing to know about as well. All right, do we have any questions? So Susanta asked a question, actually. Susanta's asking a question. This case seems to deal with compile time errors. How do we deal with runtime errors, Glenn?
Well, that's a good question. I'm glad you passed that one over to me, Kim. I was hoping you were answer that. But runtime errors are things that we all get as developers anyway. And I think if you're managing your process, if you're dealing with errors, I mean, sometimes you be defensive and you write unit tests, and sometimes you have to be reactive and respond to runtime errors that you've not seen before. And then just bring that back. It's really part of the whole process, where you might, for example, you might run your application internally in a more complex environment, run it through simulations like automated user testing, for example, and then go, that's part of the runtime testing. But if you don't have that, or if it has things that you don't pick up on, then that's probably just an opportunity to fix your code. I mean, we have to be reactive. I don't think that this is really any other way.
Yeah, because exactly as you say there, Susanta, this is done at compile time. What we're talking about is compile time checking, right? Which is good. That's gonna, you know, get it out the door. But errors are gonna happen in production, right? That's just reality. Now, Rob posted a link out. I was gonna reference this one. Let me just bring this up here, because there is a good learn module on exactly this topic. I'm wondering if Rob has got the same one that I was going to talk about.
Probably.
There we are.
There's only one for Kudu.
Yeah. So Application Insights. So for runtime situations, you know, Application Insights is probably where you want to be logging your information out to. I think you really just got to use the best practices from, you know, like developing ASP.NET Core applications in terms of handling exceptions and doing what you can in there. There is also a learn module, if I'm not mistaken. Let's have a look. Let me see if I can find this here. If I type in kudu, here we go. Here's probably one that's of interest to you as well. So there's this one here that I've seen before that we have. Let me post a shout out to that one. Diagnosing startup errors in your application using the kudu console, right? So if, you know, it builds, but you know, it just doesn't even start, there's some definite things you can do here, and you can have a look at the app startup error. So this is a really good module for you to go through. Okay. Susanna also asked another question. If we can automate test cases, at what stage should we accommodate this in our wonderful deployment workflow?
I would say as early as possible. Like that's, you have the test cases to really catch that behavior you don't want. So I tend to do it early on, because otherwise you're just doing things manually. And if you add up all that manual time, the quicker you automate it, the more time you have to actually do development.
Yeah. So I suppose there's a couple of questions, like, well, we can think about this from a couple of different perspectives as well. So one is, you know, when should we incorporate into our workflow in terms of like building your project? My recommendation would be, you know, if you're working at iteration zero, file new project, right? Get that auto building. That should be part of like sprint zero, essentially, right? Because you don't want to get through to the end and then realize you can't auto deploy it. So the sooner you can do that, the better. You know, it's a lot like writing unit tests. The sooner you can write the unit tests, the better you are. But just in terms of like DevOps pipelines, I think you really want to be doing the unit tests and any of those sort of integration tests you might be doing before you go through and deploy it. And so if you've got a more complex environment like that, probably, you know, you're starting to have a look at Azure DevOps, you know, and that sort of environment where you can set up release gates and you can get it to run unit tests before. Now it is actually possible, I haven't done it, but it is possible in here to actually hook into the Kudu environment and tell it to run unit tests and commands beforehand, before it does deployments as well. So technically you can hook up things like, you know, NUnit into the Kudu environment. So as it builds, it runs your unit tests as well. But my recommendation would be, if you're going that way, you probably start, you're probably in the Azure DevOps sort of world. You're in a more mature DevOps environment. So hopefully that helps. Yeah. Okay. Now, Susanta's asking another question as well, which is a great question. Can this deployment work in OS agnostics in Azure? So meaning, you know, if you develop under Linux, deploy in Windows OS, things like that. So I guess the question is, you know, will what we've talked about today work if you're not using a Windows app service, or perhaps if you're developing on Linux? And I think the answer to that is yes, it does. You know, this is a build process designed for deploying to app services. Yeah, so I don't see any problems there, Glenn.
No, certainly not. And I certainly do that as well. Like, I develop on Linux sometimes. I actually quite like the Visual Studio Code on Linux, and I'll go there from time to time. And then I'll deploy to Windows services as well. But yeah, it's, if you're working with .NET Core, then it's just really some more source code, and the build process can pick that up. It's really unlikely you'll find many operating system differences that cause issues.
Yeah, fantastic. So look, you know, Glenn, I think we've largely achieved what we set out to do today, right? So we've got ourselves a continuous deployment environment, okay, where we make a change and it's going to take that code, it's going to push it up into our app service. So I'm going to give us some more confetti here, Glenn, because I think we've achieved what we're after. So just what people think of questions they might have, why don't you give us a little bit of a wrap-up, Glenn, on what we sort of went through today?
Sure. So our goal really was to configure an automatic build system based purely on the tools that we know, the Azure portal and GitHub. So Azure's deployment center has the build service, and that allowed us to achieve this goal just by integrating into that commit and push flow. And the originally used manual flow has a number of disadvantages. It can lead to that classic "it builds on my machine" situation where a project builds locally, but not on the build server. We've all had that pain. It's a real pain and we all feel it. So the manual process brings the danger of pushing an incomplete project live into production. So using Deployment Center, we spend less time on building our solution locally. We catch those issues earlier and before they might accidentally end up in a production environment. So that's probably the summary of what we've done today. It was a nice little quick session, but a lovely session.
And the most important thing, you know, it gets rid of this guy. You know, it works on my machine. That's not a problem anymore. Anyone can commit that code from any of their machines or from a browser or, heaven forbid, straight from the GitHub editor and have that code consistently go through the same process for deployment as well. All right, fantastic. So no more of that. And, you know, really, it was just with a few simple clicks. And somebody earlier on might have been Ken mentioned, for example, he was using FTP. Might not have been Ken. No, it was Ken, FTP or Zip. It can do exactly the same thing with that as well. It can take that that information and deploy it out. Beautiful. All right, so we're actually at the end of another Learn Live session. So we've covered off Azure DevOps. The Azure Deployment Center. We've got our flow going. That's going to become really, really important for us in future sessions, Glenn, where we're actually sort of getting in and writing some code, because we don't want to rely on me, obviously, in order to do it. We want our build serve to do it. Another great little Learn module to have a look at is this one here, implementing a code workflow in your build pipeline using Git and GitHub. So that's a really good thing to also reinforce a little bit of knowledge in there as well. So, you know, remember, this is actually the third of our 5 sessions. So in the next session, we're going to start writing some code. We're going to actually improve our application by using something called Azure Storage, which is a really, really fundamental system, right, in Azure. It's used by lots and lots of different things. So we're going to talk about what Azure Storage is. We're going to choose an appropriate storage approach as well. Okay, so let me just also leave you some links here as well. So first of all, we've got our code available at vanars.repo, aka ms.vanars.repo. We love it if you can tell us or give us a little bit of feedback on the sessions as well, what you like, what you didn't like, et cetera. So there's a link here, aka MS Learn Live Session 3 Survey. If perhaps Rob or Matt could throw those links into the chat window. And also, if you've got any other further questions, you know, maybe you've got, you know, questions about Learn Live, things that we're going to cover in the future, or, you know, just other feedback or questions, feel free to shoot an email through to msusdev@microsoft.com. So we'd also appreciate that as well. Okay, let's have a look, see if there's any other questions. Matt's just putting in that link into the chat. Glenn, anything you want to say before we finish up for today?
No, I'm quite good. Thanks everyone for coming, and stay safe, stay well.
Stay safe in this time. Beautiful. And Ken and Susinta and all y'all who posted questions, thanks so much as well. So with that, I think we're done. So join us back in 2 days' time when we're going to talk about setting up storage as well and using that. All right. So take care, everyone. Bye for now.